The following programming is sponsored by BLS Productions. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
This week has been a little crazy. Sit back and get your recap of what happened and what is happening in sports, entertainment, movies, TV, politics, technology, and current events. You can count on getting a dose of comedy, great guests, fun, the best talk around, and even more outrageous fun. That's why we love those two guys. Fun, fascinating, and real. We are live with the Brian and Lee Show. So unbelievable, we could not make this stuff up, even if we tried.
And it's great to be back here on another Friday morning here in the Delaware Valley. I'm Brian.
I'm Lee.
And this is the Brian and Lee Show coming at you on WWDB 860 AM. And is it really the 1st of November? Because it does not feel like it.
Well, it does to me. It's Thanksgiving time.
Exactly. But
and then Christmas.
You know, back in my day, October used to be cold.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a hot day.
It was a hot Halloween.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
I can't believe it either. It was the first Halloween that I can remember that kids were not wearing jackets over their costumes.
Yeah, yeah. We had quite a few people come out.
Exactly. And then they were disappointed when they found out you ate all the candy.
I know. But, yeah. I showed them my belly, you know. And
so this if, you where, want, if you want some, come and get it.
This is where all the candy went. It was good. Yeah, it was good. No, we had candy for the
Yeah,
kids.
We did.
Yeah.
And it was more than just dollar store bubble gum.
Yeah, what does Halloween teach you? It teaches you that if you beg for candy, you'll get free candy. So if you don't do job begging.
Not begging because of the fact that you need to have a costume on. We don't just give away candy.
Right. But that, in a way, that's begging. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's trying to get candy, trying to get people to throw candy at you. Yeah.
Throw candy at you.
Yeah.
What do you think this is, a bar mitzvah?
I don't know. Crazy stuff, yeah.
Absolutely. And for the second week in a row, the Eagles made it a great game, but for the second week in a row, it was only the second half that was very great.
Yeah, I thought they played a lot better, you know. They did.
Still, what is it now, 8 games, 9 games without scoring a point in the first quarter?
Yeah. That's they're not allowed to.
Apparently not.
They're not allowed to score in the first quarter. But, hey.
Colin, what's that all about, the Eagles not scoring in the first quarter?
I think this time the other team had the ball pretty much the entire quarter, so at least it was
a little different.
Yeah.
But still, you know, you still get the ball for about 5 minutes, so you still have the chance to get points.
Yeah, they're at least doing a little better overall, though.
Mm-hmm.
Got some good momentum now.
Absolutely.
They're playing like on all cylinders, kind of. Yeah, so I was happy. I was happy with this game. They didn't make the mistakes.
And the few that they did make, they were able to come back from it.
Right, and they were playing away, which
is always hard.
It's always a little harder to do. I'm not sure Kansas City. Kansas City, man, they're what, 7-0?
Well, a lot of people are saying that they bribed the refs.
I don't know.
Why they're still perfect.
They're perfect, all right. You know, they're doing a great job.
Speaking of perfection, the last play of the Washington game is going to be played at every training facility, saying what not to do on a Hail Mary pass.
Yeah, that's true.
You leave the ball alone.
Yeah.
There was one Washington guy surrounded by 5 Chicago Bears. The ball came to all them. The Bears tipped the ball up, and it went to the other guy, who was not even going to have a shot at the ball.
Yeah, that's what happens. Yeah.
That's why I said leave the ball alone on a Hail Mary pass.
Well, Washington's unbelievable, too.
Because of that, yeah, the Eagles are still in second place.
Yeah. But you got a whole, you know, number of games to go.
Yeah, exactly. So, including two in the later part of the season with Washington.
With Washington, yeah.
And that's what it's probably going to come down to, the last game of the season.
That could be, yeah. Could be.
Now, for as many years as I've been watching the World Series, I did not know that a World Series game was not won on a Grand Slam until Game 1 of this series.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
That is.
Yeah.
The only thing I did know from retrospectives was the Kirk Gibson home run in 1988, and that's exactly what this felt like.
Well, hitting a Grand Slam, that's pretty hard to do anyway.
That's definitely hard to do.
Yeah.
Especially with two outs and the tying run at third.
Because you have to have three guys on base, right?
Right.
So the bases have to be loaded.
Right.
And then you got to stand up there with all that pressure and try to hit it out of the park.
And Kirk Gibson didn't even do that. All he needed was one tying run on base, and he wound up winning the game-winning home run.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
On one leg, practically.
Mm.
He messed up both of his knees in the playoffs.
Wow.
So he practically hit the home run with only one leg.
One leg, and he hit the home run.
Yeah, and he was hobbling around the bases.
Jeez. Give that guy a cigar.
Yeah, well, oh, I think he's the only player that I know of that batted 1,000 in a World Series.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was his only at-bat.
Huh. I love it.
Absolutely.
And the election is this week.
That's right. The election is this upcoming week.
Yeah, a few days away.
How long will the line be?
I hope not long.
Well, you know what you're going to do, or I'll do it for you. We're going to take out a stopwatch, and we're going to start it as soon as we get in line.
Yeah.
To see how long it takes for us to get from the line to the ballot box.
Well, I think your idea of going early is probably good.
Yeah, because everybody who has not voted early or by mail is going to be there, and I know that there's a lot of them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I don't know. This election is like really, we don't know who's going to win.
Well, of course not. You're not supposed to know who's going to win.
And you may not know for a few days after the election.
Exactly. Like last time.
You might not know for like a week or two. And that's going to be devastating.
Very.
Yeah. Because, you know, no matter what happens, Trump's going to move in.
That's the way it seems.
He's trying to move in. I don't know. But it's crazy.
He's trying to turn the White House into the Taj Mahal.
You know.
Which already failed.
He had a rally at Madison Square Garden.
A hate rally.
Yeah, well, kind of. And
basically, they're saying we hate everybody else, but we love Americans.
Yeah. And, you know, it was crazy because he had comics making racist jokes.
Exactly.
And he had other people getting up and talking all kinds of...
He had washed up wrestlers.
Yeah. I mean, crazy stuff at that rally.
Exactly.
And then he came out and he...
He was falling asleep.
Yeah. He talked for a while. You know.
Mm-hmm. He talked or he rambled? Mm-hmm. I didn't watch it.
He rambled for a while. Yeah.
That's basically what he does.
And Kamala had, here in Philadelphia, she wasn't here, but she had Bruce Springsteen and...
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama here.
Over at my alma mater.
John Legend was there playing the piano.
Over at, I will always call it the Apollo of Temple.
Yeah.
No matter what the heck it is nowadays.
Well, I think it's the Leah Chorus Center.
No, Apollo Temple.
Apollo Temple. I don't know.
That's where I first saw a taping of Wheel of Fortune.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's what I will always call it.
Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's just like what's going on with Twitter now. Everybody keeps saying, I'll call it tweet until the day I die.
Yeah, that's true. No one's going to change it to X.
Nobody's calling it an X.
No.
Excretion.
No. Nobody does that.
No.
It's hard to change a brand name.
Absolutely.
You have
especially one that's as popular as Twitter is.
Yeah.
Or was.
It's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But the election, you know, you got to go out and vote, guys.
Absolutely, because if you don't, you lose your right to complain.
Yeah, don't complain later. Yeah, but I think it's going to be like a toss-up, I think. A lot's going to depend on what happens in Philadelphia.
Oh, of course.
How many people come out in Philadelphia. So.
How many bad things are going to happen in Philadelphia?
Well, you know, they had some things where they had fires in ballot boxes.
Exactly.
I don't think in Philadelphia. But
no, that was in another swing state.
Yeah.
That happened.
But it can happen, you know, where people light matches.
Exactly. Fortunately, they were found and they were arrested.
They were found?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
I think I did hear that they were arrested.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Israel attacked Iran. We were doing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They did that. They really didn't hit anything bad.
No, they were going for the Iron Sheik, but then they forgot that he was already gone.
The Iron Sheik. Yeah. Hey, don't mess up the Iron Sheik.
No.
No.
They didn't realize he wasn't buried there.
No. 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 That's right.
Exactly.
But now they want to have a ceasefire.
They say they're due.
Yeah.
But will it actually happen?
It's all theater. You know, it's all drama. Uh-huh.
Exactly.
It's like Dallas was.
It's like the Ukraine attack.
Yeah.
You know, like they say, we want a ceasefire, and then they say, no, we're not going to do it.
Well, now they have North Korean troops.
Well, you know why, don't you?
Going to fight for Russia in the Ukraine.
You know why, don't you?
No.
Because all their Russian troops were dead.
Oh, a lot of them are. So they're getting these troops. But these troops don't know anything about the geography, or they don't speak Russian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that works.
My only guess is that they have a translator.
Could be.
When they have boot camp.
Oh, you think so?
It's a possibility.
Wow.
You need a translator for everything else, so why not?
Why not? But anyway, we got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking to Aaron. Is it Aaron?
It's either Aaron or Aaron.
Aaron, maybe. Aaron or Aaron. Shetterly.
That's correct.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And his book is about, new book, Morningside, is about the 1979 Greenboro massacre.
Trying to call it Greenberg?
Greenboro. I think you should do the.
It sounded like you said Greenberg. It's like you're trying to make it Pittsburgh or Harrisburg.
Yeah. Greenboro.
North Carolina.
Yeah. So. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes.
So it's a subject for today.
It certainly is. And it's one that I'm not familiar with, even though I'm familiar with a lot of the other rioting problems of the 70s.
Without a doubt. But you're not familiar with that.
No. I only got familiar with stuff from the Philadelphia area.
We watched over the weekend Bruce Springsteen documentary, and which was very good. You know, I enjoyed it.
Did you feel like you were on the bus with him?
Yeah, I felt like I was there at one of his concerts again.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that, you know. Seeing what he does to prepare for a concert.
Did you feel like you were in the mosh pit?
No. I've never been in the mosh pit.
That's something that you would never do.
No, anywhere.
Especially nowadays with what you call your flat feet.
Yeah, I don't do never did mosh pits.
No, but you did stand for 4 hours, even though you had a seat.
Yeah, I did. Because when you go to a Bruce Springsteen concert, it's hard to sit down.
Yep. Well, that's what I found out about the World Series. You know, like any other game, you know, like I'm sitting by first pitch.
Right.
But there, you know, like I stood for the first three innings.
It's amazing to do that.
It is amazing to do that. I couldn't take a bite of anything until probably like the second inning.
Yeah, the name of the documentary is Road Diary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really good behind-the-scenes documentary of Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. And Bruce's career, how he, you know, he talks about how he got started. It's kind of sad because they kind of...
Mm-hmm. Yep. The one thing I always loved and was fascinating to me was the very first moving van or tour van that he had.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to make cots inside.
Yeah, trying to string together some bunk beds. Yeah.
Oh, no, the bunk beds didn't come until the RV.
Right. That's true. But, no.
You know, they went from a minivan to an RV to a tour bus.
And the E Street Band has been together for 50 years.
Right.
Man, no band survives 50 years. Well, the Rolling Stones, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Technically the Beatles, but not with all of them.
No. But, you know, the E Street Band lost some members.
Yeah, of course.
Along the way, but, well, yeah.
The majority of them are still there.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we're going to come back with our guest right after these words.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
The man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles. Or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena. Whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood. Who strives valiantly. Who errs. Who comes up short again and again. Because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
I love the Army. You just have this brotherhood that you can't find anywhere else. Since coming home from war, I've tried so many different things. I just remember thinking, like, it's over.
After being forced to medically retire, Angie battled addiction to prescription medications, eventually losing her house and marriage. Then she found Wounded Warrior Project.
And so I went online, I signed up, and I knew that Wounded Warrior Project was definitely my new community. One of the staff members, she put me in for peer mentor training. It was like for the first time someone recognized something good about me and thought that I had something to give back to someone else. Are you doing okay otherwise?
I've kind of picked up woodworking with my grandfather,
oh, yeah. So. I saw 3D stuff.
All those activities gave me a new way to live without drugs, a new way to live without feeling like I'm broken. You can live a meaningful life after traumatic experiences.
You wouldn't go into battle alone. You don't have to fight this alone. Visit woundedwarriorproject.org/notalone.
Okay. When it comes to the father and son team, you got to listen to Brian and Lee. It's the only way to go. They entertain some of the coolest things from the past to the future to right now. So tune in.
You're listening to the number one father and son team on radio, The Brian and Lee Show.
Welcome back. And again, it does not feel like November, but it is.
Oh, no, it doesn't. But we'll get through it, mm-hmm. I'm sure. Because Thanksgiving's coming up.
That's right.
One of my favorite holidays, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Who do we have on the guest line?
Well, it's a real privilege and a pleasure to have Aaron Shutterly is with us. He's the author of Morningside, the 1979 Greensboro Massacre and the Struggle for American City Soul. It's good to have you here.
Thanks. Great to be with you guys.
Oh, it's great to have you here.
So, I love the title of the book. What can you tell us the connection between Morningside and the events surrounding the massacre?
Sure. So, the event at the core of my book is on November 3rd, 1979, not 1949 or 59, but 1979, a group of labor and racial justice activists were organizing and setting up for a march that they were going to have through the city of Greensboro, North Carolina. And the march was meant to educate workers in the big textile mills in Greensboro, still some of the largest textile mills in the whole world. All of Levi's dungaree jean material was produced there at that point still. To educate workers on why white and black workers needed to come together to demand better health care, better treatment, better wages from management in these mills. And they'd been having trouble working across the race line. And this was a multiracial group of activists, black and white. And they were outside a black public housing project, predominantly African-American public housing project called Morningside Homes. And as they were setting up, a caravan of Klansmen and neo-Nazis drove up, picked a fight, started shooting, and all of a sudden, in 88 seconds, five of these activists were dead and another 10 were injured. And this became known as the Greensboro Massacre, and no one was ever held criminally responsible for this these murders. Morningside, I gave it the title Morningside because this public housing development was built in the mid-50s, and it was a hopeful thing. And it was a place where working people were going to move out of sort of dilapidated housing rentals, come to live in this publicly supported housing and move into the middle class. But by the late 70s, the image of this public housing, as it had in public housing all around the country, started to change. And, you know, instead of reporting the PTA meetings and the Library Association meetings, you were hearing about drugs and crime in these housing projects. And then they got hit with the stigma of the shooting. But at the same time, what I wanted to hold on to was this idea of hope, because the activists that survived this kept working for poor people and working people in Greensboro and around the country. And the world kept turning, the sun kept coming up, and they kept struggling despite the trauma and the stigma that came out of this event. And continue to try to make a place that was hopeful for poor and working people in this country.
So I grew up in a housing project similar to this one in mm-hmm. Philadelphia. So, in the 1950s and 60s, it was a mix of just working poor, working class poor in the area. But by the late 70s and 80s, drugs had set in and people, it became a, rather than a place of hope, to give people a way out of poverty. It became a place where, you know, there was no hope or very little of it. And so I saw firsthand a housing project like this. I think housing projects have gotten better, actually, in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's we've gotten better at it, perhaps, doing sort of mixed income developments that instead of sort of segregating one way or another people into those projects, trying to include them in the life and flow of the places we live, right? So I think you're right that perhaps some of the newer models are doing a better job.
Yeah. You know, what's tragic, you know, you say 1979, there was a lot of racism going on. There was the Klan was very active in the South and even in the North. Let's fast forward to today. Do you think we've gotten better? Or do you think, a large amount of racism still exists?
I think it's complicated, but I think that when politicians appeal to the worst in us, it can bring it out, and I think, we're having this moment now where some of these things that we hoped we had started to grow past are resurfacing and surging, and it feels perilous, I think, for a lot of people, and a lot of anxiety about it. What I tried to do was just look at this through people, but also sort of what was at stake, what were the different visions that were competing in the space there in Greensboro that had sort of national resonance. You know, were we going to sort of work this country toward being a more fair and equal place for our poor and marginalized people? Mm. Was it a country for, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants really at its core? And represented in this case by Klansmen and neo-Nazis, or is this a place where really the object is to make, a space that's efficient for big business, you know? And I think all three of these sort of visions for America were present that day on November 3rd, 1979. And what I try to do in the book is animate those ideas and those worldviews through the people who were involved.
And have you come to any conclusion in the book in regard to why, for instance, wasn't anybody sent to jail for these murders?
Well, I think there are a couple reasons why no one was sent to jail for these murders. One is that the activists who were setting up that day were sort of homegrown American communists.
Mm.
And they had just adopted that label. They had gone from being something called the Workers' Viewpoint Organization to the Communist Workers' Party just 2 years before the shooting. I mean, 2 weeks before the shooting, sorry. This was in the depth of the Cold War. And so all of a sudden you had both race and politics converge there in the South. And the first two juries of the two criminal trials were all white. There was nothing to prevent defense attorneys from striking every single black person from the jury pool at that point. There were no guardrails, if you will.
Mm.
And so these were all white juries. And then the defense attorneys, you know, wrapped their clients in the flag and said, you know, these people were just patriotic. They were defending the country from communism. You send, you know, our troops all the way halfway around the world to Vietnam to fight communism. Why are they allowed to march in our downtowns? Now, that seemed to be it was a very effective defense of the Klansmen and Nazis. But what it really curiously showed was that we were more afraid of some people with radical rhetoric marching through our city than we were of white supremacists who had a century of blood on their hands.
Mm. Exactly. Now, also, how long did these trials take?
Well, the first trial happened in 1980. It was the longest state murder trial in North Carolina history at the time. And it took, I think, about 9 months. The second trial was a federal civil rights criminal trial that happened in 1984. And that one had the longest, at that point, federal grand jury sat for 13 months looking at evidence in that. And then the final trial was a federal civil trial in which the first little sliver of justice was achieved in this case. And it was presided over by this remarkable judge from Richmond, Virginia, named Judge Robert Marriage. And he had overseen the desegregation of schools in Virginia and had to have a bodyguards for 2 years after that. And so he knew exactly what he was getting involved in. Mm. He insisted that there be a black juror. And so for the first time in the case, there was one black juror sitting in this civil trial. And for the first time and only time perhaps in American history, Klansmen, Nazis, and police officers were found jointly liable for wrongful death.
Okay, so I was worried that it was only going to be like 3 or 4 months. And it's like, okay, you're good. Next case.
Yeah, this went on for years.
Yeah. Wow. Well, yeah. At least they did take it seriously.
And eventually they did, yeah.
And five people were murdered, but only one was black. Is that right?
It's true. There were two Jewish doctors, a white WASP graduate of Harvard Divinity School, a white Cuban who was a PhD student in history at Duke, and then one black woman who had been the president of Bennett College for Women in Greensboro of the student body and was an incredibly gifted labor organizer.
Wow. Wow.
Don't forget, Lee, bullets don't care what color you are.
No, that's true. That's true.
You know, what's interesting about that, though, is that one of the shooters particularly killed at least three, if not four, with his shots of the people who were killed. And after, in the immediate aftermath, he said, using different language, I got four black people.
Mm.
And what's interesting about that to me is that once people were advocating for equal rights, it didn't really matter what color they were to the people who were against them. They were lumped in as, you know, which side they were on was the color they were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Klan doesn't like Jews either.
That's true.
They're not.
They sure don't. No, they didn't like Native Americans, immigrants,
no.
Jews.
No.
You know, yeah.
So.
Yeah. I sure hope with this election coming up, it doesn't happen again in the aftermath, but only time will tell.
Well, I mean, that's what we hear is that, you know, that calling out our worst instincts, right, as Americans being done right now. I mean, look at that Madison Square Garden event that just happened. I mean, it's horrifying.
Absolutely.
So what is it about the time? I mean, I lived through 1979 and I remember, well, although I don't remember this particular massacre, but I do remember the time very well. And, you know, it was a time of unrest and we had Vietnam and all that going on. So what is it about today that you think you can say is similar to 1979?
Well, I think you have these periods in our history of high anxiety, right, where there's a lot of change happening and people are anxious and either pushing for something new or retrenching and trying to go back to something old. And I think 1979 in the aftermath of Vietnam was a lot like that. There were, you know, people trying to go back and people trying to go forward and everyone worried. Inflation was high. You know, everything seemed expensive. There were gas lines. And I think, you know, today we have a similar sense of anxiety that we're not sure whether we're going forward or backward. People are struggling economically. And it seems that often at times of sort of economic stress, we tend to turn on each other, especially if we're encouraged to. And I feel like there are these moments of high anxiety, and this is one and that was one. That's what it seems like to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that analysis that I think there is some economic uncertainty today, and people, you know, any time you have inflation and you have prices are higher than what you normally expect, people are going to be a little bit upset. You know, mortgage rates are 7%, and you know, house people can't afford to buy a house. You know, young people. So yeah, but as you said, in 1979, we had, you know, inflation was a lot higher than it is today, and you know, we kind of survived the gas lines. I remember waiting in a gas line for 4 hours. You know, so yeah, there was that uneasy feeling during that time, and there also is similar an uneasy feeling about this time. You know, you throw into that with the abortion ban and you know, overturning Roe v. Wade and all of that, you know, into the mix, and it just seems that we're more polarized than ever in this country.
Yeah, I think in some ways we're more polarized now than we were in 1979, to be honest with you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a much more of a broad agreement about, you know, sort of how America worked. And, you know, I think that even though we were beginning to distrust our institutions, like the FBI, for example, that plays a role in this history that I wrote about, the lack of trust in institutions now is far greater and more disturbing, I think.
So what do you want people to take away from your book?
Well, you know, here's the thing about Greensboro, North Carolina. It has this long history of, you know, being part of the Black Liberation Movement, from the Underground Railroad to, you know, it was an important site, to the sit-in movement starting there in 1960, to this. And so I think that one of the things I want people to take away is that we don't just automatically progress. We have to be vigilant. We have to keep pushing to make sure that everyone is included, and that we have more work to do to make sure people are included in our society, in our politics, in our democracy. The other thing I think that I'd like people to take away from this is that if there isn't accountability, these bad ideas, you know, which travel as fast as good ideas, become empowered. And, you know, what happened in Greensboro was, when there was impunity for these white supremacists, that led down the road to other events. So when I found out about this history, which I had no idea about in 2015, it was 3 months after Dylann Roof had walked into the Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, prayed with some Black parishioners, and then shot them. And Dylann Roof held Greensboro up as a shining example of the battle for, you know, a white ethnic state. And so, you know, when we don't hold people accountable for things, I think it comes back to fester and perpetuates some of our worst things into the future.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I believe that's true. Yeah. And I think, as you know, the progress that we've made, I'm not sure we've made enough progress. I think there's still underlining in this country, underlining evidence of hate and distrust of people. And, I don't see that changing.
But I also hope, and I'll tell you, I also hope when people read this, that, you know, that these messages come in, it's not a preachy book, it's a story book. Mm-hmm. And I hope it's, you know, that reads more like a detective story in some ways. And it's told through the people, the FBI agents, the police, the activists, the lawyers. And I hope that people just actually enjoy the read, to be honest with you, even as they're absorbing some of this history that's complex.
That's a smart idea, because then a lot of people who like those kinds of novels or stories won't even realize they're being educated.
Hey, that was sort of my hope.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about you're married to an author.
Yes,
of
I am.
Number one bestseller.
Yeah, Margot Lee Shetterly, my wife, wrote Hidden Figures that was made into that movie that was so popular, too.
And that's one of my favorite movies, I have to tell
you. It's a great movie.
It is. Well, it had to be a great book, right?
It is a great book. Yeah. I'm extremely proud of her.
Absolutely. That's great. So, you know, does she give you any tips for writing, or do you kind of keep that separate?
Oh, no, we're a team. You know, we help each other out. We read each other's work. We're each other's first readers and give advice. And I would have been hesitant even to write this book without her oversight and her input. You know, she helped me get things right, and that was extremely important to me.
Well, you're
absolutely.
You're definitely a smart man.
Yes, listening to my wife. That shows.
Yes, always. Always.
I agree with you.
There you go.
Yes, dear.
There you go. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on the show today, and I'm gonna pick up a copy of the book, because I think it's a story that is. Needs to be learned, and also I think it fits in today's times.
Well, you'll learn things. I promise you, you'll learn things about FBI history that you didn't know. And that was part of my exciting journey, is digging up some things that had never been written before about the FBI. So that was fun.
And you're welcome back anytime, because I feel like we just scratched the surface of this topic.
Well, if you get a chance to read the book and want to talk some more, you know where to find me. And I've really enjoyed this conversation. I thank you guys.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
Thank you. And we're going to be back right after these words.
The man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles. Or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth.
but you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Women Heart is in a race to save lives. Heart disease is the number one killer of women. It's 80% preventable, if you know the facts. Millions of women are living with or at risk of different types of heart disease, like AFib, which is a type of irregular heartbeat. It affects both women and men, but women with AFib have a higher risk of stroke and death than men. Get educated. See your doctor. Know the facts. Diet and exercise are key to staying healthy. Know the risks. Women Heart does something really unique, solely focusing on women and providing peer-to-peer support. To win this race, we all have to do it together. Our hearts beat as one. To learn more, visit womenheart.org.
When it comes to father and son team, you got to listen to Brian and Lee. It's the only way to go. They entertain some of the coolest things from the past to the future to right now. So tune in.
You're listening to the number one father and son team on radio, The Brian and Lee Show.
And we're back.
Yeah, that was a good interview.
That was very good.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Thank you. You all too.
Right. Hell of a job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Colin. You too.
And you know, it's this weekend we set the clocks back.
That's right. It's your favorite time of year, daylight savings time.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's my favorite. I thought we were going to do away with all this.
It was brought up for a vote, and they said no, we're going to keep it.
Oh, okay.
As far as I know,
I thought maybe they wanted to wait a few years, another year or so.
Yeah, they want to make sure that everything's still normal.
Yeah.
Before they start doing something drastic.
Well, you know, I don't mind gaining the hour.
Oh, of course not.
That's not as bad as losing the hour.
Well, it's a double-edged sword, I think, because, yeah, you gain an hour of sleep, but you also lose an hour of sunlight.
Right, right. So it gets darker earlier.
And if you hate driving at night, then you got a real problem.
Right. I don't know. I've never liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we need it. But that's not, you know, what am I going to do about it?
I don't know.
I'm going to set my clock back.
Do we really still need landlines?
No. You don't.
That's like the next thing it's going to go, probably.
Could be.
Landline telephones.
Could be, you know. Well, I think it's important to go out and vote this week.
Yes.
If you haven't done it already, some people have voted early. But if you haven't done that, go out on Election Day and vote.
Mm-hmm.
You can't complain if you don't vote.
Exactly. Very important. I know you probably don't like waiting in lines. This is one line you should wait in. No matter how long it takes.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to wait in line. You're going to hold my space for me.
And what are you going to do, sleep in the car?
I might. I might go around the block. I don't know. But I am going to.
Why don't you go to Dunkin' Donuts and get us some coffee?
I'm going to go and vote. There's no doubt about that. You know. And we'll see. We'll see what the outcome is. But who knows? We don't know.
No, we don't know
what the outcome could be, but it's going to be interesting.
That's probably putting it mildly. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if we'll have the results.
I doubt it.
Yeah. You know,
unless, like I said a few weeks ago, unless one of them gets like 350 electoral votes.
Right. Right. That could be.
Mm-hmm. Hasn't happened since 1984.
No. No, not at all. Not at all. I'm watching another season of The Lincoln Lawyers is on Netflix. Really, really enjoying it.
Abraham Lincoln was a lawyer?
No, No, it's Lincoln. He drives a Lincoln.
Oh, okay.
He's a lawyer who drives a Lincoln.
Oh, okay.
So they call him a Lincoln lawyer.
And what does it say on his card? Look me up at my Gettysburg address.
Maybe. I don't know. But no, it's a good show. It's well written.
Uh-huh.
Very, very good.
Well, you weren't a lawyer, but you made it cool before everybody else started driving Lincolns.
Yeah, he is a Lincoln Continental. I had a Lincoln Town Car.
Right.
And that was
obviously
cool.
The Continental is a lot bigger.
I don't know if it is.
Well, it looks like it is.
I liked the Town Car. The old one.
Isn't that what Jock Ewing had? He had a Continental?
I think so. I think so. I think he had a few Lincolns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Ewing 1 was definitely a Lincoln.
Yeah. Which, by the way, the real Jock Ewing is the owner of the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
He was an oil man, and then he became the owner of the Cowboys.
Yeah. Yeah, he was an oil man. He worked the oil rigs and hit it big.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he made his money.
Exactly.
And then he bought the Cowboys. So there you go.
Bought the cat, wasted all that money.
Without a doubt. Yeah. So I, watching the Bruce Springsteen documentary and him talking about, 50 years on the road with the E Street Band and how he's at a time of his life where people have left. A lot of his friends have died. And,
exactly.
Yeah. You know, a lot of band members. And,
Well, at least he doesn't go by the Richie philosophy.
What's that?
At my age, I'm not trying to make friends. I'm trying to eliminate friends.
Well, yeah, I like that. Yeah. But, I've been doing a lot of that in my own life.
Exactly.
Because I'm at a time where, I just, I'm retiring from doing what I was doing.
There was also a time where you also can't watch home movies anymore.
No, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll try.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it again someday.
There's so many people in those films that have left us.
Yeah. Well, and he sings a song about that, about he's the last man standing, yeah.
Exactly.
Because the guys that he started a band with when he was 15, they're all dead.
Exactly.
So he's the last man standing.
And we also saw the Hollywood version of the Dating Game murderer.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was good.
Yeah, that was the woman of the hour.
And it was...
They took some liberties, basically saying that the date or the woman canceled the date.
Well, she got a little nervous, I think.
Well, she did, but I mean, they made it seem like it happened all in one day.
Yeah.
It didn't.
No, but he was...
He was creeping her out.
Yeah, and...
After the show.
Well, rightfully so. He killed a number of women.
Exactly.
So.
And from what I understand, it was not somebody in the audience that recognized him. It was somebody who recognized him when it aired.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so they changed that part of it.
Yeah, to make it more compelling.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And, the only other one that I haven't seen yet and I really want to see is The Luckiest Man on Earth.
Which one's that?
That's the Michael Larson story.
Oh, okay.
I've heard from Bob Bowden, who worked on Press Your Luck, and we've had him on the show before. He said that they did take some liberties there, too.
Okay.
I'm curious to see what they are.
All right, let's watch that.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this is all coming about after 30 years. Is it 30? Yeah, 30 years since Quiz Show in theaters.
Wow. Didn't realize that.
It's right. 94.
And they're making a docudrama of Bruce Springsteen's life, part of his life.
Oh, boy.
So they're shooting that now in New Jersey.
What is it called? The E Street Life or something like
no,
that?
No. I don't know, something from nowhere. But yeah,
I'm surprised they didn't call it Glory Days.
Yeah, nah.
Now that would have been too obvious.
So,
or maybe Born in New Jersey. That's a good title.
What is interesting is that, you know, he struggled when he first started.
Well, sure.
And
just about everybody does.
He talks about being booed off the stage, mm-hmm. opening for a group and being booed off the stage. Yeah. I think he opened for Cheech and Chong, and he was booed off the stage. So, yeah. You got to start somewhere.
Oh, of course you do.
And there you go.
Exactly.
Hey, come on back next week. We'll have another great show for you. Get out there and vote.
That's
Remember,
right.
Be strong, stay strong.
The Brian and Lee Show is a BLS production.